Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
So the US has paused military aid to Ukraine following last week's clash with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Last night, a White House official confirmed President Trump has been clear that he is focused on peace. We need our partners to be committed to that goal as well. Well, on his way into cabinet this morning, the Taoiseach said there's no doubt the decision is a very, very serious development. And in the last hour, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has been responding, saying Europe is ready to massively boost its defence spending and that we are now in an era of rearmament.
The answer from European capitals has been as resounding as it is clear. We are in an era of rearmament. And Europe is ready to massively boost its defence spending, both to respond to the short-term urgency to act and to support Ukraine, but also to address the long-term need to take on more responsibility for our own European security.
Now, that is Ursula von der Leyen speaking within the last hour. Let's get the very latest. We're joined from Brussels by Europe correspondent with Euronews, Shona Murray. And Shona, that statement from Ursula von der Leyen, it seems to be a fairly swift rebuke to Donald Trump cutting aid last night. But that statement and that action, it was in the works since yesterday, wasn't it?
That's right. We were informed yesterday evening by the Commission that she would make this statement at 9:15 this morning. But also it's ahead of an EU summit on Thursday where defence was going to be very much at the forefront. And that was an emergency summit. So all the EU leaders are coming out on Thursday to discuss it. So this is her proposal to the member states before they arrive here in Brussels, because at this point the EU is saying we need very strong decisions. Of course, Donald Trump's announcement to pause aid to Ukraine was a bit of a surprise, but not a total shock, given what we saw at the White House, given the language, the message from the White House. And as somebody said to me on Friday night after that confrontation, it wasn't just Zelensky's humiliation, it was the humiliation of all of Europe.
Yeah, I mean, you say it wasn't a shock, and we know that Europe has been preparing for a Trump administration for some time. But was this really on the agenda, that he would, in effect, walk away from Ukraine?
We've been asking this question, literally the only question almost for the past few weeks, because nobody's known the answer. But a lot of people were saying different things. Some were saying, look, he won't do that. But then the next thing you're asking is, well, will he unwind sanctions? And then we're hearing from Marco Rubio that they want to re-enter economic partnerships with Russia. So anything is possible. And I think this was on the cards in some way. And I think Mark Rutte, the Secretary General of NATO, has sort of said as much if you read between the lines, because he's been so forceful about member states and the European Union really making these decisions on Thursday. As I said, this is an emergency meeting. It wasn't in the calendar for the year, and that decisions would have to be made, that the EU would really have to step up and member states will. And if you look at it, the rearmament proposal, it's 800 billion euros, using 150 billion of loans, changes to EU rules around budget deficits so member states can borrow more to spend on defence. There's changes to the EU budget so cohesion funding can be used on defence. There's talk about changing the European Investment Bank, the scope of that, so that it can invest in defence. So it's really such a fundamental change. But as she said herself, Ursula von der Leyen, the whole post-war economic and political order for Europe is in complete shift right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that the consensus is that the US has abandoned Europe.
So all of those line items that you just mentioned there, Shona, are they all on the agenda for this leaders' emergency summit on security on Thursday? And what are we expecting to emerge from that?
So these are all that the Commission can announce, because anything to do with the budget, anything to do with deficit rules, that's what and also one of the other issues, I think the fifth pillar is very interesting because it's about joint procurement. So it's very similar to what happened during COVID with the vaccines, that the EU would borrow and would invest in defence, whether it's missiles or helicopters or radars or on behalf of the the member states, and then you bring down the cost. So similar to what happened with vaccines, when you buy in bulk, you get something much cheaper. So all of these are on the agenda. All of them are proposed by the Commission. What we don't know yet is which part of this requires unanimity and which part doesn't. But for example, if you're talking about a member state deciding to spend more on defence, that's their own remit. That's not an EU competence, that's a member state competence. The EU is saying we will adjust our rules to allow you to do that. So all of these things are very much within the remit of the European Commission, and they're also immediate. And I think that's what is so important about this, because for too long, the EU has been so slow to make decisions around defence and security because it hasn't had unanimous decision making or unanimous decisions, because member states like Hungary and Slovakia consistently block this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that is the stumbling block here, because that could derail any agreement where you need unanimity, right?
That's right, yeah. And we've already saw on Saturday morning, Viktor Orban, the Hungarian Prime Minister, saying that he does not want any conclusions at this meeting on Thursday, which is pretty bizarre, given the moment that we're in now. He's saying we don't want any formal conclusions at this meeting. It's not a calendar meeting. It's an emergency summit. And given the sort of disarray the US and the EU relationship is in, we don't think it's suitable. Now, obviously, you know, Hungary is very much seen as a Trojan horse within the European Union. Even today, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State in the US, is meeting with Peter Szijjártó, the Hungarian Foreign Affairs Minister, just weeks after he snubbed Kaja Kallas, the EU foreign policy chief, after she landed in Washington, D.C. She was supposed to meet him and he cancelled. And her sources I know have said that that was a complete snub. It wasn't a clash of scheduling. The meeting had been arranged and he decided to cancel at the last minute after the woman had arrived in DC. So now you know the relationships and who's allies with who, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the relationship between the EU and the United States. We know the state that it is in. So who's going to be sent out to try and build bridges? Is it Emmanuel Macron? Is it Keir Starmer? Not in the EU, but we saw over the weekend very much bringing the team together.
Yeah, but see, nobody knows the answer to this, because, you know, if you were to ask that question maybe on Thursday, you would have said, oh, Macron and Trump seem to have a good relationship. And, you know, Trump came to Paris for the opening of Notre Dame and so on. But then he humiliated Europe alongside Zelensky on Friday. And he's also said that he's going to end military aid to Ukraine. He didn't say that. In fact, Keir Starmer told Parliament that that wasn't in the plans for Trump. In what way can you rely on your engagement with Donald Trump if one minute he's saying this and the next minute he's saying another thing? And he also said that he would always be there for UK troops if it's required, if they were in Ukraine. Is that a backstop? Or is that just Trump saying that in that moment in the Oval Office? So it's really hard. And then after the meeting with Macron, which was said to have gone very well, even though there was no security guarantees, he then voted with Russia, with Belarus, with Israel, you know, against a resolution condemning Russia. So it's not reliable, the engagement, in any way. I mean, although people might say someone like Giorgia Meloni could be, because she's more pragmatic and defends Ukraine, Viktor Orban can't be, because he never really has Europe's interests at heart, and certainly not Ukraine's.
Yeah, it's an ever-changing situation. Shona, thank you very much for joining us from Brussels. That's Shona Murray. We're also joined by former British Army chemical and nuclear weapons expert, now a fellow at Magdalen College in Cambridge, Hamish de Breton-Gordon. And Hamish, thank you for being with us. I mean, can you assess what sort of an impact this is going to have on the battlefield for Ukraine?
Well, thanks very much for having me. I think in the short term, it won't have a huge impact. But psychologically, it has a massive impact. And on the battlefield, psychology to physical is sort of 10 as to 1. So I think it's really unfortunate. It strikes me that Trump is a business leader, and business leadership and military leadership are very different. I've done both, and I'm rather better on the military side, I must say, than the business side. And I think that is perhaps the mistake they're making, because he appears to be giving all the Trump cards to Putin at the time. He's sitting back and actually having this breathing space, exactly what the Russians need, because they've lost 1 million casualties so far. They've lost so much equipment and everything else. So it is giving them breathing space. But it's the one thing I agree with Trump is that we in Europe have neglected our defence really for the last 20 years or so, and we need to step up. So all you've said already, I think, is absolutely right. There is this issue with the EU, but just to my final point on here, a European coalition of NATO countries is what is going to have to step up and do this. And if that doesn't include Hungary and some of the other Trojan horses, as you said, then so be it. But it's really down to us now, I think.
So you welcome this move announced by Ursula von der Leyen. It's time, she said, to rearm Europe.
I do, absolutely. Perhaps the wordage is challenging, but we need to create a European coalition, military coalition, that can hopefully provide a ceasefire enforcement force in Ukraine to a deal that's agreed between the Russians and Ukrainians. I think ultimately we need to think of the nuclear option too. If that doesn't work, then I personally believe that the European coalition forces need to think the unthinkable and put, you know, boots in the air and on the ground, because we in Europe cannot afford to have Russia take Ukraine, because I think nobody who studies this thinks that it'll stop there, and that will have us all in. So fine times at the moment. Hopefully America will come good at some stage, but this is a military issue here. It's not a business issue.
But Hamish, if I follow what you're saying to its logical conclusion, you've got Europe at war with Russia.
Well, I think that is the worst, as I say, the nuclear option. Now, Trump was saying on Friday that it was Zelensky who was toying with Third World War, a war in Europe. I think it's the opposite. I think it is Trump who's toying with that. Absolutely nobody wants it. But if we can't have a ceasefire that is agreed between the Russians and the Ukrainians and a peace force provided by Europe, then the worst option is the fighting continues. And if the fighting continues, and if we don't want to get dragged into a much wider war, I think European countries like the UK and France are going to have to commit troops to this fight.
Now, you said at the beginning that the real impact of this US decision would be psychological. But in terms of hardware, how much does Ukraine have, and how long will it last for, given that the pipeline now has been cut from the States?
Well, you're right. In pure military terms, at the tactical level, and I mean thereby on the ground, the fighting, they probably have a couple of weeks, maybe at the most a couple of months of supplies that are sort of ready to use. But as you say, it's those longer term items. It's some of the HIMARS and the ATACMS, the really sophisticated missiles that the Americans provide, that they don't, you know, if they are stopped for 4 or 5 weeks, then that is when they run out. That will have a strategic impact. So in the very short term, no. But if this goes on for more than a few weeks, then yeah, it could be hugely detrimental. Whether, as Ursula von der Leyen says, that Europe's going to step up, you can't make these missiles overnight, as it were. They're not on the shelves in Europe. So they're in the challenge. That is why I'm sort of saying that I think the European NATO countries must wave the specter of actually, you know, committing perhaps some of their own air forces to provide air defense over Ukraine as a sort of worst case backstop, because it is that, I think, that will bring Putin to the negotiation table. If he thinks he can win in Ukraine, and at the moment he's been given all the opportunity to put Ukraine in check or checkmate, then I'm sure he will carry on without a second thought.
Hamish, stay with us for a moment, because the US Vice President J.D. Vance has been speaking in the last few minutes on Fox News. Let's take a listen.
There was a lack of respect. There was a certain sense of entitlement. And most importantly, look, we can look past all of that stuff, but the president has set a very clear goal for his administration. He wants the killing to stop. And I think that it's very important that President Zelensky, and of course President Putin too, they've both got to come to the negotiating table. And that's ultimately where things broke apart. I think Zelensky wasn't yet there. And I think, frankly, now still isn't there, but I think he'll get there eventually.
You know, Hamish, Keir Starmer has said in the last number of hours he believes that Donald Trump does want the fighting to stop. And given that we have seen this action from Europe, I mean, would you agree that perhaps we are a step closer to that? I mean, think what you may about how we've managed to get here. But when you see Europe making moves on defence in this way, is peace closer now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got into this position because, as we discussed at the beginning, we neglected our peace. And Putin is somebody who respects strength and exploits weakness. So when he looked west on the 24th of February 2022, he saw nothing to concern him or stop him. Now, when he looks west, hopefully he is seeing actually a Europe that is galvanized, that is going to build up its force. And even now, conventionally, European NATO countries do overmatch Russia or what's left of the Russian military. So I agree that Europe is making the right moves at the moment. But what's coming out of the White House is just not helping. What J.D. Vance has just said there is a little bit more, you know, is better. But the changing of messaging coming out of the White House, again, I put it back to military leadership and military judgment. You know, having confusion is the worst possible thing you can have. You need to have clear thought, clear orders in order to be able to execute a plan. So closer to peace, but confusing messages coming out of the White House are only feeding into the Kremlin rather than into Kyiv.
Hamish, great to have you with us. Hamish de Breton Gordon. So how might all of this impact us here? Harry McGee is political correspondent with the Irish Times and is with us. Hello, Harry. Thanks for joining us on this morning. Now, we know that Simon Harris, as we speak, is bringing this proposal to Cabinet to remove one leg of the triple lock on Irish involvement in overseas peacekeeping missions. We've heard the global context in which that move is being made. So what exactly is being put forward here and how does it play into everything that we've been hearing?
Yeah, essentially the triple lock, Claire, has been in existence for just over 20 years. It came in just after the Nice Treaty, when it was the first Nice Treaty, when it was defeated. And there was a declaration at the following European Council meeting in Seville, the Seville Declaration, that provided the basis for the triple lock. So essentially for any Irish Defence Force deployment abroad on a peacekeeping mission, it needs the authorisation of the United Nations, either the Security Council or the General Assembly in the first instance, secondly, the government itself or the cabinet itself, and thirdly, the Dáil or Oireachtas. So the difficulty for the government for the past couple of years considered has been the first leg, the United Nations, because it has essentially been in virtual deadlock for much of this century, as divisions have grown between the big five members of the Security Council. That's China, Russia, America, Britain and France. Each of them can exercise a veto, and the veto will mean that any decision taken by the Security Council, all 15 members, cannot go ahead if even one of those vetoes it. And in recent years, Russia in particular has vetoed some key decisions. So that has led to increasing frustration on the part of the Irish government in recent years. There was a forum on peace and security 2 years ago, and Micheál Martin, who was then Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs, signalled that he really wanted the triple lock to be amended. There has not been a mandated UN peacekeeping operation since 2014. That's over 10 years. And twice this century, Russia has exercised its veto for very important potential UN missions, one in Macedonia in 2001 and the second in Georgia, continuation actually of a mandate in Georgia in 2009. So what has been proposed, Claire, is that that be removed and that Ireland will take decisions to join regional peacekeeping operations, but they will have to be in keeping with Chapter 8 of the United Nations. And that's the charter that allows, part of the charter that allows the involvement of regional arrangements as long as they maintain the principles of the United Nations. So what's happening essentially is the government is saying that we're removing the mechanism by which these Defence Force deployments are mandated, but we're not removing the spirit. It will still be done according to the UN Charter. Actually, interestingly, the UN Charter makes no reference at all to peacekeeping missions. It has a rather more general term, pacification or pacific settlement of disputes, and that has been widely defined over the years. But this, of course, has been controversial because the opposition and academics have said that moving the state outside the ambit of the United Nations could be a very dangerous move, and they are very, very opposed to it. And they're saying that they agree that the United Nations needs to be updated and it needs to be amended. But they say that there are mechanisms within the United Nations that would allow the deployment of such a peacekeeping force in future.
Harry, just in the context of Ukraine, if there were to be a ceasefire, Does this mean that it would be easier, if Simon Harris gets this through, as we expect he will, that it would be easier for Irish troops to become involved in a peacekeeping mission in Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely, because one of those regional organisations, of course, would be the European Union, and the Irish troops have been involved in European Union operations before in the former Yugoslavia and also in Africa, in Mali. So, I mean, if the EU were to go in under the ambit of keeping the peace, it's sure that the Irish Defence Forces would be part of that under this new mechanism. Of course, they wouldn't be taking part in any peace enforcement or aggressive peace enforcement. I'd say their involvement would be confined to more limited peacekeeping, which is kind of logistical support, mine clearing, administrative support and what have you.
Harry, thank you very much. That's Harry McGee there from the Irish Times, and we'll keep you up to date with any developments on that story, and we'll hear plenty more on tariffs too, which Donald Trump announced overnight would be happening, would be coming into effect today. This is in relation to Canada and Mexico, and plenty of reaction to that too. But coming up later in the show, we're going to speak to a panel of Ireland's greatest sports stars about their retirement. But next, 4 in 10 Irish people will be classified as obese by 2050.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.